From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama says the climate change reports he gets are terrifying. Donald Trump has called man-made climate change a hoax. Hillary Clinton says she'll fight for change, but it's unclear how far she'll go. On this issue alone, Americans have a huge choice to make in the 2016 race. This hour On Point, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and climate change. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's at stake on this front in the next presidency? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from a Trump energy advisor and from climate guru Jeffrey Sachs, who says we've got to move fast. Joining me first from Washington is Coral Davenport. She covers energy and environmental policy for the New York Times. Coral Davenport, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, it's great to be with you, Tom.
You were on a piece just last week. The president was in Asia. He came out with this big agreement with China to move forward on the Paris Climate Accords. Your people at the Times talked with him mid-Pacific, and he said he had received terrifying reports from his advisors on climate change. What's he talking about?
Well, I interviewed my colleague Mark Landler, and I interviewed the president in Hawaii last year. The president was talking about his morning meetings. He has morning briefings, and he regularly gets briefings from his science advisor John Holdren. And what's interesting about sort of some of the newest science on climate change is that it tells us not only sort of we've had science on climate change for a long time saying the future could hold rising sea levels, increasing drought, more devastating storms, food shortages, that could be coming in the future if we don't act. What has changed in recent years on the science is that these impacts are happening now, that sort of the ability to prevent them or stave them off is really kind of moving, we're moving past that. And so the president was talking about seeing these reports of drought, extreme storms, food shortages, rising sea levels that are already happening now, and the impacts, the future impacts, could be a lot sooner and a lot more devastating than had been feared. That's kind of what he was talking about. He said this is scary, and you know, he said when we see these, we sort of think, well, we have to get on this right now.
Coral, 8 years ago, when Barack Obama was running against Senator John McCain of Arizona. As you remind us, they had essentially the same position on global warming, that it was caused by humans, that Congress should enact legislation to deal with it. What about this time, the view of Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump on climate change itself?
There has never been a more stark divide between the two presidential candidates on this issue. And a great sort of way to compare that is, again, to say, 8 years ago, President Obama and his Republican opponent, John McCain, were indeed in the exact same place. You know, it's caused by humans. We need to do legislation to counteract it. When President Obama ran against Mitt Romney in 2012, Governor Romney did not deny the science of climate change. He did say he opposed Obama's policies. He opposed Obama's regulations. We have never seen a presidential candidate from either party take the position that Donald Trump takes, which is to deny the established science of climate change, to say that it's a hoax, to say that it's not real. That is something we've sort of seen, you know, some members of the Republican Party, Republican Congressional Caucus say, but we've never seen a presidential candidate essentially say, you know, this established science isn't true. So Hillary Clinton has vowed to uphold and strengthen President Obama's climate policies and has tried to, you know, kind of elevate it and make it a bigger piece of her campaign than we've seen Democratic candidates do before. But especially with Donald Trump's position. So in both cases, on the Democratic side, we've never seen a candidate kind of make it a central issue of their campaign. And on the Republican side, we've never seen a candidate outright deny the science. So the difference has never been more stark or extreme on this issue.
Here's Donald Trump talking on the radio with Hugh Hewitt.
I'm not a believer in man-made global warming. It could be warming, and it's going to start to cool at some point. And, you know, in the 1920s, people talked about global cooling. Now it's global warming. And actually, we've had times where the weather wasn't working out, so they change it to extreme weather, and they have all different names, you know, so that it fits the bill. The problem we have, if you look at, you know, our energy costs and all of the things that we're doing to solve a problem that I don't think in any major fashion exists.
A problem that doesn't exist. And here's Hillary Clinton at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia with quite a different take.
I believe in science. I believe climate change is real, and that we can save our planet while creating millions of good-paying clean energy jobs.
Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump, no, doesn't believe in man-made climate change. Hillary Clinton says she believes in science. Coral Davenport with the New York Times is with us. In policy terms, Coral, what's on the table then in the choice between these two candidates for the future on this front?
So for Hillary Clinton, her biggest pledge is to uphold and strengthen President Obama's climate policy. The way in which that will probably happen, President Obama's signature climate change policy is a set of regulations that would cut greenhouse gas emissions from coal-fired power plants. If that is upheld and implemented, that will be the strongest step ever taken by the U.S. to cut emissions. The question is, will it be upheld? Right now, it's in legal limbo. The Supreme Court has put a halt on President Obama's climate plan until all legal cases against it have been resolved. It's probably going to end up before the Supreme Court sometime in 2017 or 2018. And so the biggest way in which Hillary Clinton, if elected president, could influence the outcome of Obama's climate policy is who she puts on the Supreme Court, who she appoints to the Supreme Court. If she appoints a nominee with strong green credentials, environmental credentials, or who she believes is very likely to uphold that President Obama's climate change regulation, then it will be implemented. And that will be a major, major step in cutting U.S. emissions. It will also be very transformative for the U.S. economy. It will shut down hundreds of coal plants, create demand for wind and solar. It could be somewhat disruptive as well for some sectors. So that's sort of the biggest thing, is just who she appoints the Supreme Court in. How that person rules on President Obama's plan. And then the other piece, she has pledged to spend $60 billion on a plan to increase solar energy, increase energy efficiency, low emission infrastructure, so heavy investments into building all of this new low carbon energy. On the other side, Trump has, you know, says essentially human-caused climate change isn't real, isn't a problem. He has vowed to dismantle the EPA. And the other really big thing that he has done is he has said that he would, and his word is, cancel the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement was reached last year. It was a landmark UN accord, for the first time binding almost every country in the world to plans to reduce their emissions, with plans to come forward every 5 years with even tighter and more stringent plans. Right now, no one country could, in the words of Donald Trump, necessarily cancel the agreement. This is a universal accord reached and agreed to by over 190 countries.
That the U.S. and China reaffirmed last week, right, when President Obama was in China.
Well, what they did something very important, which is that they both ratified the agreement. That's really important. The deal has been signed by almost all of the countries, but it needs to undergo a very important and critical legal step. It needs to enter into legal force. For that to happen, at least 55 countries representing at least 55% of global emissions actually have to sort of turn in their paperwork and ratify the deal. Once that happens, then every country that has signed the deal is locked in legally for at least 4 years. So once that happens, even if the next president of the United States said, well, we're going to ignore the deal, we're not going to pay attention to it, the U.S. would remain a legal party for at least the first term of a Trump administration.
And might it be enacted through the U.N. somehow before Donald Trump would take office?
So that is what U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is trying to do right now. When the deal was first reached last year in Paris, the expectation was that this would be something that would take about 4 or 5 years to get to that legally binding, to enter into legal force. Now, essentially out of concern for a Trump presidency, the UN Secretary General has kind of put out the call and, you know, pushed for countries to send in their ratification and get it done this year, possibly even this month. The UN General Assembly is coming in tomorrow. So all these countries will be at the UN, at the General Assembly, and the Secretary General is sort of, you know, has been going around the world kind of banging the drum saying, hey, get your paperwork in, get it done. Let's try to get this done right now, this year, before the U.S. election. So even if there is a President Trump, this thing will be entered into legal force. It's a global effort to literally Trump-proof the Paris Agreement.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the presidential contest's fork in the road on environmental policy. Hillary Clinton would continue to battle climate change. Donald Trump says he would not and would dismantle efforts already underway, would take us out of the big Paris Accord. You can join us this hour. What do you see coming here? Can you picture an American president next year saying no to the Paris Accord, pulling the U.S. out of the global effort to rein in CO2 emissions? Is even Hillary Clinton committed enough to adequately contain our fossil fuel emissions? Can you picture President Trump killing the Environmental Protection Agency, ordering coal mines back into overtime production, drilling the Arctic? Who's got the right idea here? Coral Davenport joins us from Washington. She covers energy and environmental policy for the New York Times, was talking with the president about his efforts on this front just last week in Hawaii. In China, when he was there, the U.S. and China formally ratified the Paris Agreement at the G20 summit in Hangzhou. U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on leaders around the world to do the same, and in a hurry.
I urge all leaders, particularly including the leaders from G20 summit, to show their leadership by accelerating their domestic ratification processes so we can turn the aspiration of Paris into the transformative climate action the world so urgently needs.
Donald Trump says, give me the authority and we're not going to do it. Here he was. This was at the Williston Basin Petroleum Conference in Bismarck, North Dakota, in May, vowed to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement and said he would stop payments to a UN fund to mitigate worldwide effects of climate change.
We're going to cancel the Paris Climate Agreement and stop. Unbelievable. And stop all payments of the United States tax dollars to UN global warming programs.
UN trying to get that done and in a hurry right now before the potential election of a President Trump. Hillary Clinton, she'd go with the Paris Agreement. And in Seattle earlier this year, she said she'd do more.
We've got to go further. I've set some big goals. I want to see us deploy a half a billion more solar panels by the end of my first term. And I want enough clean, renewable energy to power every home in America by the end of my second term.
Now, not everybody thinks she would go far enough. On the other hand, you've got people who are on the Trump bandwagon who say, hey, let's drill, let's mine that coal, let's unleash fossil fuels. And that can be all right, they say. Congressman Kevin Cramer is one of them. He's an energy advisor to Donald Trump, Republican, represents North Dakota in the U.S. Congress. He joins us right now from Bismarck, North Dakota. Representative Kevin Cramer, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be with you, Tom.
Do you support Donald Trump when he says no to the Paris Accord?
Oh, I do. It's been interesting to listen to your previous, to you and Cole, discuss this issue, because I think what's missing in it is the larger issue of, are we prepared really to escalate in the final months of the Obama administration a move, an acquiescence really, of the American economy to global interests? And I don't think very many voters find it comforting that the UN Secretary General wants to escalate the commitment so that we can Trump-proof the American economy. I find that frightening. I think a lot of others do as well.
The warning there has been that if we don't radically rein in fossil fuel emissions, carbon dioxide, that we're going to have a global problem here that's hitting us already. Do you not see that problem? Are you with Donald Trump in saying that man-made climate change is a hoax? Are you in that camp?
I would fall probably somewhere less than there. I'm more of a skeptic about the man-made part of climate change. I'm also more skeptical about the devastation and the alarmism that is being escalated as we get to the end of a president's term, whose political legacy in many respects is based on promises he made on Iran that he would bankrupt all the coal companies and cause electricity rates to necessarily skyrocket. He's certainly fulfilling that promise, but he seems to, as he winds down, he seems to be winding up.
Have you been in Louisiana lately and seen all the flooding there, the people whose homes have been destroyed by these sort of once-in-a-thousand-year downpours? You've got scientists all over saying, look, we've got evidence right now of extreme weather emerging out of this trend. We've got to reverse it.
So the question then becomes, if we are to believe that the once-in-a-thousand-year flood in Louisiana was the result of climate change, then we have to ask ourselves, is unilateral disarmament of the American economy going to make a difference in that? And when you look at...
Why do you say unilateral when we just reached agreement with China?
Well, okay, let's talk about China for a moment. This, of course, is on the heels of the president going to China and signing the deal where China gets to continue to grow its emissions of CO2 gases for 30 years while the United States reduces its, and then he comes back, and the president comes back and calls that a good deal. And that's sort of at the heart of this whole election, I think, is making good deals and looking at the United States and an America first energy policy rather than a global energy policy, where we really don't think we're in a strong position to even trust our so-called allies that are signing these deals. We're going to now trust China as one of the leaders in cleaning up the climate when we know that they're one of the greatest polluters and have more rights to grow the greenhouse gas emissions than to reduce it. And quite honestly, if most of the rest of the world was meeting U.S. standards for emissions and all kinds of other environmental standards, maybe we would have a very different scenario. But up to this point, it's always the U.S. that is expected to lead by disrupting its economy, while other nations sort of wait for us first to put ourselves at a disadvantage.
I mean, Congressman, as you well know, over time, with our big industrial surge over the last couple of centuries, we have been by far the biggest polluter over time. Now, yeah, there are others who are out there as well. I mean, how do you look at this? I know, of course, in North Dakota, you've got the Bakken oil fields, you've got a fossil fuel boom going on, and you've got, I suppose, you feel an economic responsibility to support that. But what about the climate effects over time? Are you not concerned about your kids, your grandkids, and the climate that they may face if we keep pumping out CO2?
Well, I'm concerned about all kinds of things as it relates to the future of my children and my grandchildren. I mean, 83,000 coal jobs that have been lost since Barack Obama started fulfilling his promise to shut down the industry. That's a pretty big concern in a state like North Dakota, where we mine 30 million tons of coal per year and burn it all right here in our state to generate electricity for several states. And that, by the way, are also one of about seven states that meet all ambient air quality standards as prescribed by the EPA, because we know how to do these things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not opposed to, and nor do I believe Donald Trump is opposed to, working with industry and environmental groups and states, and very important component in all of this are the states that seem to be being left out of this, to find appropriate emissions standards that aren't arbitrary, that aren't capricious, as are the ones in the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan, and then work with them on the technologies to use all existing and perhaps emerging forms of energy, but to pick one or two and just say that's the problem, we're going to shut that one down, but we're going to produce a whole bunch of solar panels that are going to fix this problem, and we're going to put $60 billion into it. This is a political agenda more than it is, in my view, a climate or an environmental agenda. And I think that the American public, and that, let's not forget them again, they certainly want to see, I think, they want to see politicians deal with greenhouse gas emissions. And there's a wide spectrum of, you know, denial and alarmism. And, you know, we tend to put people in one box or the other, and the reality is there's a large spectrum. And yet it's still not really a high priority for the American public. And if it's not a top 10 or 20 issue, compared certainly to the economy and jobs creation and competitiveness globally, national security, I think you're going to see the kinds of political battles that we're witnessing right now, where the differences, as you say, are very stark. Although I do find it interesting as well, though, that much of the premise of your show this day is built on that even Hillary Clinton is being questioned as to, is she going far enough? I think that tells you that there is an uneasiness in the country with sort of the extreme agenda of the left on this matter.
We're looking at the science, we're looking at the future, and trying to figure out what the policy implications are of a Trump or a Clinton presidency. Representative Kevin Cramer is an energy advisor to Donald Trump. Please stand by there in Bismarck, North Dakota, if you would, Congressman. With us right now from Manila in the Philippines is Jeffrey Sachs, special advisor to Secretary Ban Ki-moon on sustainable development goals, author of The Age of Sustainable Development, professor of economics, been a big voice in the world lately on the threat of climate change and what's coming. Jeffrey Sachs, thank you very much for being with us. What do you see in the choice between Clinton and Trump in November on the environment front?
Great to be with you, Tom. Well, this is a global crisis, and it's a global issue, and that's why 196 signatories, every single country in the world, signed the Paris Climate Agreement last December. Every single country, because all over the world, the climate is being destabilized, and it's very, very dangerous. And everywhere that I travel, and that's a lot of countries, as you know, Tom, mm-hmm. there are droughts, there are floods, there are heat waves, and there is tremendous danger. There's the increasing spread of disease. There is reason to believe that there are more emerging diseases spreading over larger areas like Zika and others because of the warming. We've just had the warmest year in instrument record, indeed the warmest year for hundreds, probably thousands of years from all of the best evidence. And every month this year has set a new record. So this is an extremely serious problem. I'm glad that the congressman who represents major oil interests and is a major recipient of oil funding says we need sound emission standards. Couldn't agree more. What we need to do is look at what the science tells us is necessary and act accordingly. And we need to do that at a global scale. And fortunately, the congressman has excellent university in his state. He could go to Grand Forks and go to the Department of Atmospheric Science and talk to the scientists there, and he will be well advised to do so because he will know from some of the top scientists in the world just how serious this problem is and how much we need to reduce emissions very sharply in our country, in China, and in the rest of the world. And that's what this business is all about. The rest is just politics and campaign finance.
But politics are going to elect a president, and quite soon now, and I want to look at the contrasting policies here and their implications, if I may. Jeffrey Sachs, how do you see the choice then in terms of consequence, climate consequence, environmental consequence of a Trump versus a Clinton presidency?
Well, if Trump did what he says, and who knows what he'd actually do on anything, given how he swings day by day, it would, of course, pit the United States against the entire rest of the world, and it would throw the world into geopolitical turmoil. It's a bunch of nonsense, frankly. I think it's just populist garbage on the campaign trail by a man who hasn't cared or taken an interest or doesn't have any interest in representing the truth on this.
That's
issue.
Easy to say, but he said that he'll walk right out of the Paris Agreement. Could he not do that?
No, I'm not saying it's easy to say. We have a tradition of that. We walked out of the Kyoto Protocol. Mm-hmm. We have done basically nothing in our country since signing the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. And I think Congressman Cramer should understand, I'm sure he does, that when he says if other countries would meet our standards, that's a bunch of hooey, because the United States emits 17 tons of carbon dioxide per person per year, the highest in the world of any major economy. And we've been doing that for decades. So we are way beyond China in per capita emissions. We're way beyond all of the rest of the world, aside from a few small oil states, basically. And we have a major responsibility for our own children and our own well-being in a country that's beset by droughts, floods, rising sea levels, rising coastal erosion, to do something about it. But it's not true that we're way ahead. We're way behind. And we've done nothing since 1992, since signing the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change.
So if the U.S. would walk out of the Paris Agreement, would it collapse, or would the rest of the world go on without us, or what do you anticipate?
It would be a profound global crisis of the first order. It would not simply collapse, because the rest of the world and most Americans, and that is a significant majority of Americans, maybe not the ones that take large campaign financing from oil interests, but the majority of Americans know that this is a very serious issue. And if the president of the United States did such a nonsense, it would create a global crisis.
Carl Davenport, you're listening here. You've got a congressman from an oil state, North Dakota, who says, come on, let's be reasonable. We don't have to go down this road. The U.S. is doing enough already. And you hear Jeffrey Sachs say, no way, the U.S. is behind. If the U.S. does lead this accord, can you see any way that it will hang together, Coral? Or are we just headed back into CO2 emission growth and super peril?
It is hard to imagine how the Paris Accord hangs together if the U.S. were to walk out. The centerpiece of the deal is the agreement between the U.S. and China, the world's two largest emitters. The U.S. is the world's largest historic emitter. The majority of CO2 that's up in the atmosphere right now, trapping heat today, was put forth by the U.S. Today, China is the largest annual emitter. And these are the two giant pieces of it. Together, the U.S. and China represent about 36% of global emissions. So if the U.S. were to pull back from that, it's really hard to see why or how the rest of the world would continue to go along. It's hard to see how you take a really significant bite at the problem if the U.S. isn't a part of it. So, again, that's kind of why the rush to get the Paris deal entered into legal force before the next president is inaugurated.
Congressman, we just got 30 seconds before the break. Would you like to see the Paris Agreement go down, Congressman?
I certainly would. I'm sort of alarmed listening to people that suggest that the United States is the only country in the whole world that matters in this thing, and the whole thing falls apart. And yet it's really, really critical, and we're the ignorant ones. And then, challenging who I get my campaign finances from, because I represent my district, my people, the many people put out of business and out of jobs by this, or using terms like garbage and hooey in the context of a scientific argument. I think it illustrates exactly why it's as hyper-political as it is.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from the industries at risk of disruption to understanding bouts of market volatility, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. or listen at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the presidential contest's fork in the road on environmental policy. Hillary Clinton would continue more or less the Obama agenda in battling climate change. Donald Trump says he would not. He would dismantle the Environmental Protection Agency. He would take the United States out of the big Paris Agreement that the U.S. and China just ratified. Every country in the world has signed on to. We're looking at the implications of that policy fork in the road that comes with the election in November. Coral Davenport is with us. She covers energy and environment policy for the New York Times. Congressman Kevin Cramer is with us from Bismarck, North Dakota. He is an energy advisor to Donald Trump. And from Manila in the Philippines, Jeffrey Sachs is with us, economist. He has also been the director for sustainable development at Columbia University, big thinker and writer on climate change and what's coming. President Obama in Nevada at the end of August said it's going to be tough to get out ahead of climate change.
It's not going to happen if we boast about how we're going to scrap international treaties or have elected officials who are alone in the world in denying climate change or put our energy and environmental policies in the hands of big polluters.
Donald Trump says, is it man-made climate change? No, he's not going there. He's talking with Fox News' Bill O'Reilly in June.
They're saying man-made, and I say it could have a minor impact, but nothing to what they're talking about. Yeah. And what it's doing is putting us at a tremendous disadvantage as a country, because other countries are not adhering to the rules. We are, and it makes it impossible for our businesses to compete.
Jeffrey Sachs in Manila, Congressman Cramer says that when you criticize Trump here, you're putting politics ahead of science and ignoring the impact on the American economy.
I find it absolutely ridiculous what the congressman said, I have to say. And I said that what was hooey was his statement that if the rest of the world did what the United States mm-hmm. is doing, we wouldn't have the kind of problem we have. And I pointed out, Congressman, that we are emitting 17 tons of CO2 per person. And what that means is that we're in the lead of the major economies as major carbon emitter and have been for decades. And it behooves you and it behooves the rest of the Congress to take seriously what the science says. And the science says that we have to get those emissions down drastically in short order if we're going to have any hope of keeping a safe climate for your children and my children and our grandchildren.
Would even Hillary Clinton get that done, Professor Sachs?
Not on the current plans, because this administrative approach that President Obama has started, in part because of the complete blockage of Congress, because of people like Congressman Cramer, who are funded by the oil industry. He's gone an administrative route that does not get us far enough.
Meaning it's not congressional legislation that's pushing environmental policy, but executive orders.
Right. We are going to have to decarbonize our energy system, as well as the rest of the world having to do it. I also want to be clear, this agreement is not falling apart if the U.S. walks out of it. What's happening is that the U.S. role in the world will fall apart if the U.S. walks out of it, because around the world, governments know that we need to take significant action. If the United States is absurd enough to deny the science or say we're skeptics or play these games because of the oil interests, because of the Bakken formation, because of whatever it is, and we deny the science in front of our eyes as well as the changes going on in front of our eyes, the agreement's not going to fall apart. What's going to fall apart is any credibility whatsoever of the United States in international affairs. And we already are alone, as President Obama said, because our politics are so corrupted that we're the only place where politicians dare to say the kinds of incredibly foolish things that are said every day in this country about skepticism and denial. And it's not, nobody believes this anywhere else in the world, but no one has a pay-for-play political system like the United States does, where congressmen get hundreds of thousands of dollars from the oil industry to run their campaigns. And that's what this is all about. It's nothing about what the people want or about the truth or about the science. It's about pay-to-play politics.
Jeffrey Sachs, stand by. Congressman Kramer, stand by. And Coral Davenport, lots of callers for the three of you. Mike in Alabama. Troy, Alabama. You're on the air, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. This is probably the greatest crisis that humanity has faced, short of nuclear war. Clinton's plans, Obama's plans are good. They're the furthest we've gotten, but they're climate action, mild. We need a Marshall Plan, a space race plan, to move us to, renewable energy, and the smart grid and the storage that we need with it as rapidly as possible. It's really a bold-faced lie that solar costs more. Solar, even if you don't consider the health and other negative impacts of coal, solar is already cheaper than coal. Wind is too. There are large installations around the world that are recently installed where it's around 3 cents per kilowatt hour. That's cheaper than the cost of coal. Not even considering all the asthma and disease and cancer and whatever.
But Mike, what do you hear when Donald Trump says we've got to unleash all of our energy resources, coal and oil and all of it, Arctic and all of it, to get the economy in gear?
I hear the dollars from the Koch brothers and others that have corrupted the politics in this country, just as Dr. Sachs says.
Mike, I appreciate your call. Kevin Kramer, some pretty tough criticism coming your way here.
Well, first of all, let's be very clear. Hillary Clinton and the leftists in Congress get large contributions from solar panel companies, from George Soros, and their sincerity should be every bit in question as mine, as I represent coal miners and people who work in the oil and gas industry and are losing their jobs. But that said, this notion that wind and solar are so cheap should eliminate the need for any type of an accord. If, in fact, wind and solar generate lower cost electricity that makes us even more competitive in the global marketplace, why do we need to manipulate that market with mandates and subsidies and regulations that kill the fossil fuel industry? It should just take care of itself. I personally believe that to the degree there's a problem here, that all of the above can in fact work if we set reasonable standards and then let the innovators innovate and have technology neutral policies that let everything emerge, and the winner will emerge based on economics and some sound science, some sound economic science, as well as Jeffrey's climate.
Jeffrey Sachs, what about a market-based solution here? Donald Trump says he's a business guy. Well, if we let the markets go, Jeffrey, what do you see happening?
The market right now doesn't charge the oil industry for the damage that it's causing to the world society and world economy. That's the whole point. The oil industry pays nothing for the carbon dioxide that is put up in the atmosphere, which is wrecking our climate. That's why a market approach, so-called, to this makes no sense. If the congressman is saying, let's put a hefty price on the carbon emissions to make the incentives work right, well, then he's starting to talk about something serious. And he would know that, indeed, if you put the proper price on carbon, then North Dakota becomes a super energy power in wind, because it's one of the wind plentiful states of the world, actually. But right now, it is lower cost, in fact, on the surface, to produce with the coal and with the fracking, because nobody pays the cost of the damages to the world economy and to world society except the people who have no choice, but not the companies that are producing them, not the direct users of those products. And that's why the oil industry is working overtime to have representatives like the congressman continue to stymie any sensible carbon pricing, any sensible incentive structure, any sensible full social cost accounting of this incredible damage that's being done. And that's why the United States is emitting such a vast amount of carbon dioxide per person in this country.
It's interesting that in this campaign, I mean, you have the two major candidates and they're still debating climate change itself. As you say, in much of the rest of the world, that's well in the rearview mirror. But I've heard you say that even Obama's plans are not nearly enough, which means, I guess, Clinton's plans would not be enough. I mean, what would you like to hear a candidate saying in 2016?
I would like a president to talk realistically about what the science shows. The world has agreed, and by the way, we're the only country that has this kind of absurdity about skepticism and denial, because we are the pay-to-play corrupted political system par excellence. That's why, and that's the only reason why Americans are.
We heard that, but what would you want to see by your view?
What I would like the president and Congressman Cramer and others to note is that we need a plan for decarbonizing our energy system that gets our energy converted to the wind power of North Dakota or the solar power of the Mojave or the hydroelectric power, which is in vast potential supply, or nuclear energy, which is a zero carbon energy supply, with a sensible long-term plan for doing this and working with other governments in the world to do this. And that's what the Paris Climate Agreement calls for. It calls on countries to make a long-term plan to get the emissions down to zero in the second half of the 21st century. The United States government has never put forward such a plan because of all the lobbyists. That's the only reason. We had a Nobel laureate Secretary of Energy. He wasn't allowed to put pen to paper because of the fear of the lobbyists in Washington. And this is what's holding us back. We don't have any honest scientific discussion in this country because of the likes of Exxon or Hess or Tesoro or the other funders of the congressmen and the other funders of the lobbyists in Washington, who are stopping a sensible approach to decarbonizing our energy system. We have such vast renewable resources in North Dakota, par excellence, but we're not using them adequately.
We're looking at the policy choice in the presidential choice. Coral Davenport, Donald Trump says, okay, he calls into question the whole thing of man-made climate change. Let's set that aside for a minute, though that's a giant thing to set aside. What about, he also says that the efforts to address it are economy wreckers. As you do your reporting, Coral, is there consensus around that, or is that a political statement? Is that a factual statement? How do you weigh it?
So overall, President Obama's Clean Power Plan would set standards, set lower standards for carbon emissions. Each state would be required to design their own plan to meet those standards.
Can you do it and have a strong American economy?
So there have been a number of economic studies on this, and by and large, overall in the macro, the answer is yes. There have been a number of economic studies that show, for example, the net jobs, the net employment impact of implementing the Clean Power Plan would be positive. You would have hundreds of coal-fired power plants shut down. You would end demand for coal, and so you would have a lot of coal miners losing their jobs. You would have a lot of workers in coal-fired power plants losing their jobs. On the other side of the equation, you would have great demand for workers in the solar industry, in the wind industry, installing thousands of miles of new transmission lines. You would have demand for engineers to grow and create this new technology. And again, the macro numbers, by and large, in the economic studies that have been done, do show that you get a net benefit of the jobs. However, the micro of that is that those jobs won't be geographically distributed. You will have pockets of the economy that are heavily dependent on coal, such as Congressman Cramer's home state of North Dakota. There will be coal miners there that lose their jobs, especially in places like Appalachia. Coal miners that might lose their jobs. And those new solar jobs might not be created in the same locations as
the fossil fuel jobs. Congressman, what about it? Congressman, if I may, Congressman, save the planet, turn North Dakota to wind instead of the Bakken oil fields. What about
it? Listen, prior to going to Congress, I was an energy regulator, and I cited over 1,000 megawatts of wind energy in North Dakota. And Jeffrey's exactly right. We have a huge industry here, and it coexists very nicely with coal and our oil and our natural gas.
Yeah, but we've got climate change problems from the coal.
Getting back to Mike's point, if in fact this wind and solar can prove to be more economically feasible, why are we even having this discussion if the market's going to take care of it?
But Jeffrey Sachs already responded to that, because we don't put any price on carbon emissions. We don't really tally the real cost of carbon.
We can make anything cost something if we want to put a cost.
Well, it does cost something, whether we acknowledge it or not, right? I mean, we've got a climate change crisis.
Well, sure, but you could do similarly and put some external cost on any type of an industry and somehow call that balancing, things. The reality is that the market can work. If we have an emission issue and we want to set a reasonable standard, we need to work with the innovators and the states. Take the Clean Power Plan in North Dakota. The proposed reduction was 11%. Our coal industry didn't like the mandate, but they thought they could work with that, much like they did with mercury, SOx, NOx, in the recent past. But then they come out with the final one, and final plan, and it's 45% emission reduction, and there's no time to comment on it. This kind of arbitrary and capricious science, so to speak, it's politics disguised as science. I mean,
we got a Jeffrey Sachs last word from Manila. What about the choice, Trump versus Clinton?
The last word that I wanted to mention is that this issue of jobs is so absurd, frankly, because the number of actual coal miners in the United States now numbers about 32,000 out of 160 million workers in our economy. Of course, we can help take care of them to do other things easily, because we're risking trillions of dollars of damages to the world economy over an insignificant number of jobs. We've got to get serious about this. And we haven't been serious about it. The numbers are that we're going to wreck the world over what is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of 1%.
We're out of time right there. Jeffrey Sachs, Kevin Cramer, Coral Davenport, thanks to all three of you for being with us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.